Good.
Reef.
Geller.
Hello, hello, hello. Episode 3 of our mini-series. I'm your host, SBJ. With me is Irene.
Hi. I feel like I have to apologize because I'm kind of congested. So I'm using, like, my head voice right now. So
your head voice?
My head.
What does that mean?
Like singing? Like,
oh.
It's like, it's a bad technique.
Oh.
When you sing, because then, like, you, I don't know. It's like pressure not as strong.
Yeah.
Versus, like, breathing deeply. Ooh. From your diaphragm. And
your diagram?
Diagram?
Diaphragm. Oh, my God.
I love breathing from my diagram.
I said that I was congested. That means my brain is foggy, too.
Oh. Sounds like a scapegoat. Micah is here.
I mean, you're right.
I am. I'm actually reading from my diagram. It says right here.
So
this is episode 3.
Strong start.
So before we begin, got to give our spoiler warning. This is if for whatever reason you're starting here in the podcast, if over the weekend you were playing Sword and Shield and you searched Pokemon podcast and you clicked on this, you probably saw episode 3. You're probably like, what is this? It's a series of us walking through Pokemon Sword and Pokemon Shield. We do a spoiler warning, just so if you don't want any spoilers, we give you a complete heads up here. If you haven't beaten Milo in the first gym, that was episode 2. And if you just want our initial impressions of starters and our first beginning thoughts of the game, that's episode 1. This episode, we are actually doing 2 gyms, so just a spoiler warning there. So if you have not completed the 3rd gym, we're doing both the 2nd and the 3rd gym this episode. Just here's your spoiler warning. Maybe pause it. Maybe get that 3rd gym out of the way before you come to listen. There are a couple of types of people who play Pokemon games. There are some people that run through, do everything very quickly. There are some people who might be still trying to find a shiny starter. There are some people who are taking their time. And then there are some people who never finish the game. So based on a couple things, one, these episodes have been significantly longer than our Ultra Moon episodes and significantly longer than our Let's Go episodes. Instead of dueling daily, we're going to switch it up here because we had 2 2-hour episodes, and I think this episode might be pushing an hour as well because we're going to complete 2 gyms. So this is the game plan. We're going to release this episode, which if you're listening to the day, came out on Sunday, and then we're going to release an episode on Monday, of course, and then we're going to take Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday off. So we can catch up and prepare episodes for the weekend. So we started our first episode on Friday. So we're going to do another episode Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So in total, there will be 8 episodes to this series. But because these games are so, what's the word? They're not long. There's just so much to do. And I don't think it's fair to you guys that if we just like streamline the story and just kind of talk about that when there's like other things we could be talking about, like character development, or the wild area, or the amount of new Pokemon, or the cosmetic changes.
Cosmog
changes. So that's the plan.
Changes that there is no Cosmog.
This past week, it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, 3 days off, and then another Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and that should be everything. Then we don't have to feel like we need to rush and do that way. Also, that doesn't feel weird where it's like, oh, well, this episode was an hour, this episode was 20 minutes, this episode was an hour and a half, this episode was 45. Then we don't feel like we're under a timeline or we're rushing or somebody's like, we're all waiting on somebody to catch up with us.
I feel seen.
We're going to try this structure this year because these games were a lot different, I guess, on paper than past Pokemon games, in my opinion. As somebody who's been talking about Pokemon for 9 years, this was a little jarring in a good way of how these games are kind of set up.
There's just so much, and that's a good problem, I think.
And so now that with that, all that out of the way, we ended the last podcast by battling Milo, defeating Milo, and then we get to move on to the next area. And before we get to Nessa, a couple things happen, nothing too big, but they give you the daycare option. I will just say there is another daycare in the game. It's located in the wild area. Nothing too special about that. But finally.
Hold on. There is?
Exactly. It was like there are 2 daycares.
I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So.
The only thing I remember was the like Pokemart that's just in the middle of the wild area.
Yeah, there's
a Pokemart in the middle of the wild area.
Basically.
This is why we've had to restructure the podcast. This wild area keeps throwing things in the mix.
It keeps changing. Every player has a different experience.
There's two daycares. There's one on the bridge where you get the bike.
By the bridge, not on the bridge, because that would be weird.
You don't know what's in the wild area. The one in the wild area is not on a bridge, by the way. Okay. There is one in the wild area. Let's not worry about the daycare in the wild area. Are you using the bike, Irene? Do you like the bike?
I love the bike. For a while, it was really silly. I got very enthralled with how, because it's a Rotom bike, like I would sit and just look at the back wheel because it was like sparking with electricity. And I was like, oh, that's so neat. And how fast you do those costume changes. It's very snappy.
Auto adds it to your plus and minus.
Yep.
Micah, thoughts on the bike?
It's good. That's it.
You miss ride it's Pokemon or you like the bike?
No, I like the bike. I mean, this isn't the first time we've had a bike, but first time in maybe
years,
like 3 years.
Finally a bike. There's something real nice about riding on a Persian though.
Yeah, there is. There is. But I do like the bike. And I like that they're like permeating all of the technology with Rotom. Like we see it in the PC and in your phone and in the bike. And I think it's neat. I like that they're keeping with that and not maintaining a specific level of personality, maybe, that the Rotom Dex had.
Yes, the Rotom Dex had definitely a personality.
It kind of shows that, like, if you were kind of irritated with Rotom Dex, it's like just because with how Rotom can have all the different forms just generally as a Pokemon, it's like, oh, okay, well, there's the box Rotom and bike Rotom and like the Roto, whatever. Yeah, Rotomi, I think.
Rotomi. I don't know. It's Rotom. I think it's supposed to be Rotom information or information Rotom. Is what it said in the like introduction. It's like Rotom Eye.
Always sleeping.
Rotomi sounds better. Rotomi. Yeah, it is always sleeping. What's up with that? Real tired.
The bike is good.
Oh, is it because the PC is asleep?
Oh. Probably. Gotta shake that mouse.
I just thought that was its personality, that it was like lazy.
It's just tired all the time.
I mean, why would you sit there and just be on when nobody's walking towards you?
Rotom Dex didn't turn off.
Okay, exactly. That's why I said different personalities.
He was always on.
Personalities, Pokenalities.
Okay. In the daycare is an important thing, not because they give you a Pokemon that's pretty common. I'm assuming you both picked up the Pokemon in the daycare.
No.
Yes.
Okay. There's a Pokemon in the daycare. And
is it new?
It is brand new.
I do not know what it is.
The cool thing about, I won't spoil it for Irene. If you've picked it up and you're listening to the podcast, you know what it is. We'll ask you next.
Why
next
did you
episode.
Do you did
because
this?
I think you will really like this Pokemon. But what I will say, the cool thing about this Pokemon is finally, after three generations, the Pokemon Company remembered that baby Pokemon existed, and it is. One of the first baby Pokemon since, I believe, Riolu. We have not had a baby Pokemon in Gen 5, 6, or 7.
Oh my gosh, what is it?
So baby Pokemon are Pokemon that cannot produce other Pokemon because they're babies. Don't be like me and put a Riolu in the daycare and then 2 hours later realize why you aren't getting any eggs because you're dumb and you didn't evolve it to Lucario like I did. I blame my Twitch chat. There was 100 people that also never said anything. So that was on them, not me.
You know, there's less information this time around, I think, because a lot of people are like trying to not get information. They didn't give as much. So maybe, you know, there's people doing that. I was actually wondering at the start when you said there's people probably still shiny hunting for their starters or whatever. I'm curious how many people didn't get the memo that the starters are shiny locked.
I feel real bad.
And are still soft resetting.
Still trying. That's true, because it's not like there was an official announcement. It was just kind of people on Twitter.
I'm waiting for that one day when someone comes into your Twitch chat and says, I've been avoiding information on playing the game, but I've been shiny hunting my score bunny for the last 4 days.
Oh, boy. There were still people the day before that planned on shiny hunting that I had to let know that, sorry, buddy.
Ooh.
At least if they're on Twitch, expressing their concerns, they'll at least have maybe hopefully somebody in chat or a streamer let them know maybe you should do something else with your time.
I didn't know.
New baby Pokemon, though. So if you
want to take these headphones off and go see what it is.
So if
I didn't know it was a baby.
Yeah. So if you're not familiar with some of the other babies, that would be Togepi, Magby, Riolu, Chingling.
Like, I'm real serious.
Smoochum,
I really want to see
Elekid. So this is a new baby Pokemon. You get it for free in the daycare. I will also say the other cool thing about this baby Pokemon is when it evolves, if it is a specific kind of Pokemon, I don't want to give it away. So, of course, Pokemon can have different EVs, different natures.
Genders. I really want to go. Can I just be really fast?
No. I'm going to keep you on the edge of your seat. And I won't tell you what the secret is, but obviously you could look it up if you're impatient. But if there's a specific something about the Pokemon, maybe, you know, they give it to you in a daycare. They want you to breed a bunch of it and you evolve it. It might look a little different.
Interesting. I didn't know any of this.
So, I don't want to...
Curious.
It's hard because there's so many new things, but I also want people to discover things for themselves, so hopefully that was a nice of a lead thing. There's, like, another thing with...
I hate this so much.
There's another thing with Farfetch. Obviously, we know that Sirfetch is in the game. But Farfetch itself has a very unique way to level up. And it's nothing they've ever done before in a game. And I don't have Farfetch in my game. I don't know if you guys have found Farfetch yet.
You have to knight it with a sword.
And I, at the point that I'm at in the game, have evolved it, and I don't know how.
Okay. Well, I guess a minor spoiler of how to evolve Farfetch, I guess, because Micah did it and didn't realize how. So it's not level-based. It's order to evolve your Farfetch, you need to land 3 critical hits in a single battle.
Okay, interesting. That's so wild.
It's cool. After all these years, they figured out more ways to get Pokemon to evolve.
That's pretty neat.
So after the bridge, we do run into Team Yell. That's the situation to get the bike. We end up in... Oh, man, I can't remember what the town is called. We end up in Nessa's town.
Holbury.
Holbury.
I've started writing down the names of towns because
what is the
we
town
all were very bad at remembering
in this
them.
In this game.
What does the town mean?
Town theme. Like,
oh, the town
Kanto
theme.
Kanto is colors. Johto is berries. Unova is clouds. X and Y is
100% sure.
Perfume.
I'm not 100% sure, but it just all feels very like
European.
Not European. Great Britain themed. Like, there's a specific town that has a way that it's structured, the name is structured, that feels very specifically UK. And a lot of the names kind of just feel very UK. I don't know if that's a theme, though, because that's kind of just the Galar theme.
I would agree with that. Sorry, it's being more broad, but...
So when you arrive into Holbury... Chairman Rose, not in a suit.
Yes.
And we meet... What? I'm so bad with names.
Oleana.
And she is his assistant, as far as we know in the story.
Yes. Do you want to go describe what he's wearing? Because we had a conversation about this at Community Day today.
Would you like to describe what you saw when you, Chairman... Rose was hanging out not in a suit.
He looked like he was gonna go play golf, and I saw his little belly.
I don't know if I would say little belly.
Well, I mean,
his dad bod. His dad bod was out.
She is the secretary to Chairman Rose.
He was very
stern, maybe?
I would agree with that. He seems a little bit more free. And she seems like she keeps him in check. She seems very stern and organized and schedule stringent. And he seems not that.
Yeah, we talked about this. Of it kind of looked like he was wearing like boxers, but I guess they're supposed to be more of like...
I think it's like athletic shorts and like a compression shirt.
Yeah, I kind of just wish they maybe made them look more like athletic-y, I guess, and not boxer or like pajama shorts almost too.
But it's like rich middle-aged guy athletic gear.
Exactly.
It looked very like rich middle-aged guy.
Okay.
Trying to go out for a run, but not really running.
Yeah,
just, just hanging out.
Maybe I haven't explored that part of my life yet. The middle-aged part, not the rich part.
Accurate. I
mean, accurate to
yeah. From what I know,
rich middle-aged guys.
there's definitely more houses and more people to talk to in this town compared to the Milo's town, which was kind of more of a farm slash scenery kind of town with the runes and the fields with the yampers and the pumpkaboo. So there are a couple more houses to go into, a couple more people to talk to. They do the stereotypical thing where, oh, the gym leader's not at the gym, so you have to go find her, and Nessa is by the lighthouse. No Ampharos in this game in the lighthouse, but you go find her, and she then just walks back to the gym, and you can go right in and do the gym challenge.
Something that I thought was really interesting when I was running through the houses is, I mean, maybe this has happened in the past, but there was a woman that said, oh, if the gym leaders aren't strong enough, their gym gets demoted to a minor league division.
Yes, there was drama about this, and you weren't following, so I can tell you the drama.
Okay.
So you said minor league.
Minor division.
So there was an interview with Game Informer. They had the exclusive. They revealed a lot of stuff, and at one point they said there are 18 gyms in the game, and everyone lost their mind. It was a very, like, oh my gosh, this game is going to be the biggest Pokemon game ever, 18 gyms. The last time we had something like that was like HeartGold SoulSilver, which had 16 gyms. And they very quickly clarified, no, there are only 8 gyms, but in the region of Galar, there are 18. Like, lore-wise, there was 18 gyms, but not all of them are considered major league gyms. So that is part of the lore.
I mean, that makes sense, though, because with sports, which is how this seems to be geared, like, there's like major league baseball and minor league baseball. So it's like,
totally makes sense.
Yeah. So, okay.
You could also say that there's like, 12 gyms in black and white. It's just some of them got frozen over and they weren't accessible in the second game. And so they had to default to other gyms.
Or you maybe could say there were 16 gyms. Yeah, 16 gyms in gold and silver.
that one was true. There are 16 gyms. maybe some of the gym leaders leave their gyms to become actors and they close down their gym and some other gym has to open, like Bryson in black and white. Pokestar Studios, everyone remembers it so fondly. So, yeah, that's a little bit of a lore that there are major and minor league gyms. And we've all done the Nessa battle. We did it at the Pokemon World Championship, all three of us. And I did it again at PAX. The puzzle, exactly the same. They did swap out the trainers, which is something I said on the podcast when me, Will, and Greg talked about it. There was some backlash, again, online that how could a water gym have one of the trainers use a Vulpix? But it was for demo purposes, of course.
Right.
Be kind of silly if somebody had 20 minutes with a demo and they just used Grookey and one-shot every water Pokemon. But in the demo, they had a Vulpix, they had an Impidimp, and they had a Gossifleur. So gives you a reason to use all the starters or maybe some of the other Pokemon on your team, because at that time you had a Corviknight and a Yamper and a Wooloo on your team too during that demo. So those three trainers, while in the same exact spot in the actual game, were all switched out with water trainers. Just your basic water trainers, nothing too memorable about them. Anyways, that gets to the Nessa fight. Her dialogue was a bit different than the demo, but no need to harp on the demo too much. She also had one extra Pokemon compared to the demo. So what was shown off at E3 and PAX and Pokemon Worlds was a Goldeen and a Dreadnought. And in this case, she had a Goldeen, an Aerokuda, one of the new Pokemon, also the Pokemon that appears in Cramorant's mouth when it dives, and a Dreadnought. So, Irene, I think Nessa is your aesthetic.
I love her.
How did you like the introduction and her character and the fight?
So when we went to the lighthouse, what I remembered afterwards was how someone had made a remark about how Nessa brings the most food or something, or like she brings the greatest food. And I was like, that's such a random thing to say. But then because cooking is such an element in this game, that makes a lot more sense. But that was just a comment that I made note of. I liked the fight, and I think, Steve, you came outside, like you were streaming and you exited your studio for a little bit, and you're like, oh, like you didn't see, like, oh, it's not the same as the demo. And I was just like, what? And that was before Aerokuda came out.
Was that the first time you saw Aerokuda?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you were like, oh, it's
wasn't
one of my new favorites.
The first time I saw Aerokuda, Steve.
Yeah, you saw it in Cramorant's mouth during the trailer.
Oh,
Micah.
Okay.
I was so mad.
Well, no, I remember that you were like, oh, that'll be so cool if it's a different Pokemon that's like new. And I was like, oh, I bet you it's just a...
See, that's what I thought.
Okay, were you the same people that thought Meltan was a placeholder?
I mean, what? Okay. Yeah, but I liked the battle. The strategy that I had wasn't exactly what I was planning on doing, but it was also nice because she knocked out one of my Pokemon, but then I just, like, threw in another one just to have it, because I think it was her Dreadnought. Just to like blow up my Yamper, and then which I wasn't expecting, but I ended up finishing the battle still. I don't know, it was pretty snappy, which was nice.
This was the first time that I heard the crowd chant like song
during the
battle,
during the Dynamax stuff.
No, it was like when she was coming out.
Oh, I don't think I remember that.
They were like, the whole crowd was singing a song, like chanting a song, similar to how all crowds at like football, like American football or American soccer games in
American
the UK. There's
soccer
a lot of
games.
Like football. There's a lot of like chanting and stuff and songs and sing-songy chants and such. That was the first time I had heard that in the game, and I took note of it. I don't think I've heard it since.
It
seemed maybe it was like unique to Nessa.
I heard some crowd differences, like, distinctly with my battle with Kabu, but we can talk about my experience with that later. But, yeah, that was something that I became, like, more aware and attuned to when I got to that battle.
I don't think there was anything too special battle-wise against Milo or Nessa. I still think Dynamax is great, and I still think, like, in retrospect, one of my complaints with gyms specifically was how at a certain point in the game, and once you, especially if you're a seasoned Pokemon player and you understand type weakness and stuff, you know that, oh, okay, this is going to be a grass type gym later. I'm going to bring in my fire Pokemon or my bug Pokemon. This is a water type gym later, so obviously electric and grass. You kind of know the process, and every now and then they throw a curveball at you, or, you know, a Pokemon is just bulky enough that it survives and maybe gets a chance to set up. But the at least the Dynamax makes that whole one-shotting thing not happen.
That's debatable.
I went in with a specific electric Pokemon, and I one-shot my way through the whole gym.
Yeah, I mean,
I feel
you
like
can.
That's kind of been the yeah. But again, like,
but I think Kabu shuts that down
seasoned.
A little bit. Or did you have just an easy time with Kabu too?
I haven't had too much difficulty with the gym leaders.
Okay.
At this point. but I also like I have a very specific way of playing, and a lot of it is like I level a lot because I'm just, I don't know, I do a lot of exploring. So and,
oh yeah,
like,
see,
trying
I'm
to catch everything.
I'm not like that. I'm like, what's the gym leader at 34? Oh, okay, I'm not going to go above 34 because I don't want to be in a situation to one shot it.
See, I'm more into, like, I want to catch everything in the area before I advance, and
oh, I still
contributes
do that.
To a lot of leveling.
I still do that. I have yet to battle a wild Pokemon unless it was specifically to catch it. So I'm like, I haven't like knocked out wild Pokemon for experience.
Hmm.
I've only caught them.
I definitely do. Like, if I encounter something in the wild, I feel like I have to battle it rather than just run from it. But,
oh, no. If I'm either going to catch it or I'm going to run. And I've caught every new I've caught every single Pokemon I've seen on a route, but I have never battled a wild Pokemon for pure experience, with an exception of like accidentally knocking out a Pokemon when I was meaning to catch it. So I think in total, in the 22 hours I've put in, I've knocked out 3 wild Pokemon, and none of that was intentional. It was just accidents while I was trying to catch them.
Interesting. Yeah, I play different. I also think maybe we'll talk about Kaibu when we get to Kaibu, but my starter choice maybe also contributed to why I didn't have trouble with that. But
oh, Kaibu, yeah.
I didn't catch any of the dialogue about Nessa having like the best food, but I feel like that also ties into the town, which is like a seaport town, and there's a lot of markets, and there's like a really highly acclaimed seafood restaurant there, I guess. And I feel like that kind of was part of the story for Milo's town too, like very farm based, very kind of rural. And even though maybe the gym battles aren't as spectacularly memorable for those specific gyms, I think maybe the towns themselves are pretty memorable with how well constructed they are.
I mean, I can't really tell you what's too memorable about Vila's town. She took pictures, she had bugs. You walked in, beat her, got roller skates, left.
The spider web travel, that was the memorable part.
I mean, that's gym though, that's not town. Yeah. Same with Ramos. Yeah. Like, there's nothing special about the town that Ramos is in besides you start at the north, there's a port, you take the train south, you battle his gym, and then you instantly leave the town. So after that, they do a cool thing where, I don't know if it's a cool thing, but the map is set up so instead of backtracking, it kind of like gives you like a just an alternative path to get back to Motostoke. So you have to cut through the cleverly named cave number 2.
Isn't it mine? I'm pretty sure it was the mine.
Oh, mine number 2.
It goes along with the industrial theme that most of the game seems to have.
There's two memorable things in my mine number 2. One is Bead, and number 2 is a Pokemon.
I cannot deal with Stunfisk. I was so heated about, but the cool cracker.
Karkul?
Yeah, that was cute. I liked that Pokemon.
Yeah, Karkul's cute. I think a lot of people probably, they didn't see any rumors or anything, probably surprised by Galarian Stunfisk.
I was absolutely surprised.
Oh my.
I was like, something's up with this tiny Pokeball on the ground. It's definitely not going to be an item. I wasn't expecting Galarian Stunfisk of all things.
It's pretty sweet. It's like a little bear trap.
I got jump scared by it like 3 times, and then I just kind of was maneuvering around like whenever I saw it in the floor, because I was just like, I'm not even gonna catch you, I'm just gonna walk around. But I mean,
Binnacle is there.
Yep, Binnacle is there. Wimpod is also there.
I just can't deal with Binnacle.
The star of my battle with Kaibu. I mean, attempted star.
Something they haven't ever done in past Pokemon games. You could argue that this makes the game easy, although putting you in a game forcing you to be in a situation and not being able to run away, I guess suddenly makes it harder, but they do, in every rival situation, they'll ask you if you're ready or not, and you can walk away. So that was a lot of times, I guess, people would say, like, oh, Red and Blue was so hard. And it was like, well, yeah, because when you're on the SSN and you're about to go get to see the sea captain, you don't really expect Blue to be showing up with his team of fully healed Pokemon when you just battled like 20 trainers to get there. So like a lot of the quote unquote hardness was just because you didn't know a rival was going to show up and you weren't ready for it.
Right.
So again, you could argue that that makes it easier. I don't know. I kind of liked it. Where to the point where it was like, oh, I don't want to battle Bead because I have a bunch of Pokemon that I actually don't care about, and I wanted to switch out my Pokemon, and I was catching, and the Stunfisk did a lot of damage to like 4 of my Pokemon, and I kind of, I guess maybe I could do it, but also I'm just going to say no, finish catching some Pokemon, heal, come back, battle beat, and move on.
It was not a super memorable. I didn't even really write anything down for like dialogue because I don't think there was a ton of dialogue for Bead for his this battle in specific.
His condescension.
Yeah, it's just like
especially condescending. Especially because right when you enter that town was that there was a mini cutscene with the one with Oleana when you first see her and the chairman, and then Bead's also there.
Sucking up.
Yeah, exactly. So later on, he was just like, later on, he said, "You're not weak. You just lack talent."
Yes, yes. Was that, just, was, that was his line.
Okay.
Really something.
The area after Bead, again, this game is still throwing a bunch of new Pokemon, Galarian, Stunfisk. After Bead, you can catch Hatena.
Yes.
Hatena, which is one of the Pokemon that Bead has. But you can find that in the grass after that cave. You can also find Impidimp there for the first time. Impidimp is a real Pokemon. It was something teased by the Pokemon company for months with no official reveal like Ponyta or Sirfetch. And you then end back up in Motostoke. I like the I do like the pacing in retrospect. Micah probably has had the same complaint that I did of sometimes the pacing of gyms is really weird and awful, and they don't give you a lot of downtime. And they kind of pull that again with Nessa into Kabu. But I guess they put a cave and they put a route in between, and
it wasn't much. It was very quick.
It wasn't much.
Especially, I think maybe it's just the like harsh distinction between that like juxtaposition between it taking 6 hours or whatever to get to the first gym, and then from gym one to gym three, it's like pretty fast.
Yeah, and like X and Y had it where you literally in 15 minutes can get to gym one, battle, and move on, and then all of a sudden you're going through 18 caves and you're riding a Rhyhorn and you're battling Team Flare and you're running under cliffs to get to the second gym, and you're like, geez, like, why is this gym so far away? And then in Red and Blue is kind of that same feeling too of, you know, getting to Brock's gym pretty quickly. Although when you're 10 years old and as a kid, it seems like it took you a week to get to Brock's gym. And then going through those routes through Mount Moon, which again, as a kid, feels like it takes another year to get through Mount Moon for the first time to get to Misty. And that was kind of like what people assumed they were trying to go for in X and Y, was a recreation of that feeling.
Sure.
Even though you do get to Kabu's gym very, very quickly after Nessa's, I think the pacing still feels pretty good. And I didn't feel over-leveled for Nessa, even though, like I said earlier, I caught every Pokemon, battled every trainer, but did not grind / battle wild Pokemon, which is like weird to say now at this point. And then again, I caught the Galarian Stunfisk, I caught the Wimpod, I caught whatever else was in the cave, I caught whatever else was outside of the cave, you know, minus maybe a 1 or 2% that would, I don't even know what the 1% in the cave would have been, spawn-wise. And then walked into Kabu's gym, which am I the only one that didn't think, like, when I looked at the map, I was like, where, I only see like 6 gyms on this map, where's the 8th gym? I didn't really think where they introduced the gym leaders ended up being a gym. I guess, like, in retrospect, I was like, well, of course, I guess. But I didn't think that I would go back to Motostoke to participate in that specific gym.
Oh, I caught that because I noted, too, in my notes that I thought it was weird that I was at that gym. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm not fighting the fire gym leader first, even though I'm right here. But
doesn't the first time you walk into it, it has like all the banners of every gym leader on the side?
I noticed
on the
that
side, yeah.
Later on. But
oh. Does it change to all fire when you come back, or is it still all the...
No, it was each one, because I was when I was walking in, I was like trying to figure out where they fit on in that circle that they gave you because of the shapes.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, oh, that's intriguing. But can we back up?
Sure.
Okay. So we didn't even really talk about when we saw Kabu in the mine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then we didn't talk about because Hop made a remark about poke jobs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know if that was new or if that's just something that we...
That is
okay.
New.
So again, so we'll talk about the poke jobs real quick. Hop asks if you know about poke jobs or you don't. If you don't, he'll tell you about them. If you do, so you could access that pretty much as soon as you accessed Rotomi, where it'll have different jobs, and those Pokemon will go out and do jobs and get experience and bring you back items. And the jobs are listed like send 3 normal type Pokemon, send 4 dragon type Pokemon. And you can either send them out for 24 hours, 12 hours, 6 hours, 2 hours. Obviously, the longer you send them out, the more stuff they get. But because, you know, the game's only been out for 2 days, it's hard to say if that is worth it. But if you're catching a bunch of Pokemon, which, hey, they finally are, they're trying to give you a reason to catch Pokemon.
Which can I talk about my strategy for Pokejobs so far?
Sure.
This may be specific to me because of how I've been playing, but I've been trying to keep my party limited to just new Pokemon so that I can play with them, experience them, see their evolutions as they evolve or as they level and so on, and try to learn more about them. But I've still been catching pretty much everything old Pokedex-wise, so I have just been sending out my previous generation's Pokemon on the Pokejobs, since they're not really ever leaving the box anyways, because they're inaccessible once you send them out on a job. You can't use them until they come back from the job.
Mm-hmm.
So that's at least what I've been doing, and it seems like it's kind of worth it. The XP doesn't seem like it's really that incredible, but you get some items and stuff.
Yeah, it feels
also, it's like a checklist thing for me. So
it feels like it's the same in sense as Pelago. If you decide to put 6 Pokemon into the level up island, you can't use them for anything anymore.
Right.
So it gives you gives you something to do with the Pokemon that exists in your box, which I was worried that figured they would get away from Pelago. But I hope that there would be some sort of replacement for that. Still, you know, waiting for that PokeStar Studio replacement. No, I'm just kidding. No one ever wanted a PokeStar Studio replacement. Kabu in the cave. Yeah, I forgot about that. The one thing I noticed that he said was, I love, there's lots of good water Pokemon in this cave to fight. And I just thought that was like a good line of, wait a minute, fire is weak to water, but you're like in here fighting water Pokemon. I just thought that was like a really good line of
training.
Well, they said that he was training.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Smart training.
And that's why he wasn't at the gym earlier. It's funny because when you guys are talking, like I already knew that you both have had a lot more playtime than I have. My strategy really has just been, part I'm very anxious just to make sure that I'm caught up. So I've been kind of just pushing through, which isn't typically what I would like to do. But I'm also very reliant on my guide, which I don't have yet. So
no strategy guide. Game Freak wants you to play it, and it's all of its. Yeah.
I think Game Freak was trying to prevent leaks, and that didn't work out by delaying the guide for a week.
Yeah, but
I love the way Kabu walks, holding his towel and like high kneeing all the way wherever he's going.
I almost started squatting when I was doing that battle against you.
So Kabu's gym is,
we battled. What's her name?
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about what's happening with Kabu in the mine.
Oh.
Because he's protecting a Carcoal from Team Yell, who are loudly yelling at it to cheer it on, which is really good. And they're saying that they're trying to like cheer it on to do a good job, but Kabu is upset because they're upsetting the Carcoal instead of gassing it up.
Yeah.
Which is like the intro to like Team Yell's, how Team Yell is not really that serious and just kind of like funny and goofy. It reminded me a little bit of in Sun and Moon when you find the Team Skull Grunts trying to take the bus stop.
The
sign.
Bus stop, yeah.
it's real good.
I forgot all about the Marnie part because it's pretty not memorable of like when you go to sleep and Marnie is there. And
I'm pretty sure you battle her before you go to sleep.
Yes, right. You go there to go to sleep. She's there. You battle her. And
Morpeko, though, I didn't know a lot about that. So that was something.
Oh, Morpeko or Morpeko, however you say it.
Yeah. So that I was just like, oh, that's interesting, because I was trying to figure out if there was a particular pattern, but it just seemed to be every other turn.
Yep, every other turn it goes into hangry mode.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, that's cute. Good. And then also Team Yell in the back with their fan banners for her.
Yeah.
I was like losing my mind. I was just like, oh my gosh, that's adorable. But that also reminded me previously with that Kabu interaction is that he did have a throwaway comment was like that was similar to there's a way to be a fan, but that might not necessarily be the best way to support whatever you're cheering for.
I do remember this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was like, ha, that's funny.
Yeah.
And when you see her, she's looking at the statue that Sonya was looking at.
Yes.
Which I don't think we really talked about too much, but it's like the lore that Sonya is trying to investigate about the legend and how the legend talked about this hero that fought back the darkest day with the sword and shield, and how the sword and shield are missing, and it's like the one hero holding a sword and holding a shield and on this in this statue. So she's kind of like, I don't know, inspecting it as well.
I feel like out of the four, I and I'm not that far, so this is just me guessing, I feel like Marnie is going to drop out of the challenge at some point. It just between you, Bede, and Hop and her, she maybe there's not enough story with her, but she just doesn't seem to care about anything.
She's very easygoing.
But okay. I mean, she had, it seems like her thing is dark Pokemon, right? She has or is it fighting or is it dark?
I think it was fighting.
I think dark. She had Krogonk, Morpeko, and Scraggy.
Morpeko is electric dark.
I think maybe dark feels a little bit more fitting for her. I don't know that fighting aesthetic feels like the right
Krogonk
for
her. I guess my theory is that she is the brother. She is the sister to the dark type gym leader that we have never met. That is my theory.
Oh, interesting. That's a good theory.
Because I bet as soon as we see the theory, we're going to be like, oh, they look similar. Or as soon as we see the leader.
What if it's her? What if it's Marnie?
Oh, I don't think she's gym leader material. I mean, they could
does that even mean?
She's got a whole squad of orbiters that
they could pull an Iris on us, but they already did that.
Hmm.
Interesting. I guess they did that in the anime technically. I think she's gonna be the gym leader sister because it's the whole like again, I've never read about this, it's just what I'm guessing. Leon is the champion. And Hop is the brother that looks up to it. And Marnie looks up to her brother, who is a gym leader, who is never good enough to be the champion.
And Bede kind of looks up to Chairman Rose.
I still don't know how Bede fits into any of this.
Well, I mean, Bede clearly hates everybody else except for Chairman Rose. So there's kind of like a...
But does he not hate Chairman Rose, or is he just sucking up? Like, you can hate your boss and still suck up because you know you'll get something out of it.
I feel like he really wants Chairman Rose's approval and is really seeking that, especially because in that one cutscene, he seemed kind of discouraged that he was like, oh, it's you and you've had this Pokemon I've given you or the two challengers that were endorsed by Leon. And he was just like, why are we talking about them right now? But then the scene kind of he walked away. Or
do they say Bede? What Pokemon Chairman Rose gives
no,
Bede?
No.
I mean, he has to be using it.
I'm not sure.
If it's supposed to be the Hatena.
Yeah, Hatena.
You can just find those. I don't know. They're just walking around.
I mean, I didn't even see one. But again, I was trying to just be as fast as I can be, which isn't that super fast. But
I think you're definitely onto something, though, looking at it and that, like, looking at the characters and their dynamics. I think you're onto something as far as the overarching story. Like, the overarching story with Sun and Moon was, you know, parents and kids. And I feel like maybe the overarching story here is
siblings.
Like, not even necessarily siblings, but the people that you as younger people look up to,
like
maybe?
Idolization.
Oh.
Yeah, like idolization.
Oh, like how Team Yellow, really idols,
and that,
Marnie.
Yeah, and that makes sense just generally with how everybody always is talking about Leon. Yeah.
Everyone idols Leon, especially Hop, and
And I do think
they stress that Hop is Leon's biggest fan, which is definitely cute for sure.
And I do think Irene is right that I got that impression too, that Bede idolizes Chairman Rose because they're pretty unfiltered otherwise, like to everyone, super rude to everybody, but very, very understanding and not rude to Chairman Rose.
Mm.
And it could also be that, like, oh, they're just sucking up to their boss, but that's not the impression that I got.
Yeah.
Did you guys have any, did you put any importance into that 2 second scene with Sonya, with Oleana being like, after you beat Nessa, you need to go to the seafood restaurant? And then that situation when Sonya was talking about how Professor Magnolia was very anxious about Dynamaxing and that whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Wishing stars. And it was very short. So it was like, I feel like this is information that will probably be important later on because that's usually how foreshadowing works. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Sonya's whole gimmick is she's ultimately going to solve the thing, right?
Also because she is the daughter, granddaughter of Magnolia. And she's on this mission because she wants to gain the respect of Magnolia.
I think
really
there's
hitting this theme.
There will be a better Sonya thing the next time we talk, so we'll park that for now. Kabu. Interesting gym mechanic.
What did you think about this concept of Kabu's gym?
It's funny because I complained about the Milo thing of like not realizing you're supposed to battle the trainers to make it easier for you. And I went straight to the trainers this time to battle them. And they were like, oh no, don't battle me. And
I didn't
like,
even talk to them.
I was like, oh, well, you can't. They're like, we're not here to battle.
Yeah, well, I didn't talk to them. So,
so the gimmick of the gym is you need to get 5 points and you get 2 points for catching a Pokemon and 1 point for knocking out a Pokemon. And I guess for me, I was confused on that mechanic. I was lucky enough to have a Twitch chat to say, like, oh, if you catch the Pokemon, you actually get to keep it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, the
catch is that you're doing it in double battles or like two
yeah,
on one.
Yeah, but because it was in a gym and because they've never done this before, I was like, well, if I catch something, is it actually mine? Like,
the way that
they make you use your own Pokeballs and your own stuff. So yeah. Now I'm super curious of like, what if you don't have any Pokeballs?
Well, then
like, happens? And that do you just have to battle?
You got
to
knock out 5 wild Pokemon.
Yeah, I guess just knock them out.
Because I was like, what if you failed to catch all 3? And somebody in chat was like, oh, I tried that, and you have to. They just generate you more Pokemon to knock out.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the way that the man in the front explained.
Doug, his name is Doug.
Oh, okay. Well, how Doug explained the mechanic of the gym, I was like, oh, so then I probably should catch 2 and knock out 1.
Yeah.
And then I was super excited because there was a Litwick, and I don't care. I love Litwick, but I knocked it out accidentally because I was just focusing on how obviously instead of battling the other trainer, they were attacking you.
Yes.
So you couldn't, and Doug had said, oh, you should pay attention to how the other trainer decides to go into these interactions. And I was like, ah, whatever. Like,
oh, I misunderstood that too. So when Doug said that, I was like, oh, yeah, I've done double battles before. I thought, because I don't read or pay attention clearly, I thought the other trainer was going to try to knock out the Pokemon you're trying to catch. So
I think that there are different.
So I was like, I'm going to knock out them before they can knock out the Pokemon and then I can catch it. But that's actually what you're supposed to do because they'll interfere with you.
Yeah.
I think they're different each round, though, because the first round, the trainer was just attacking the Pokemon for me.
That's not how it was for me.
And then the second round, they were attacking me.
Well, what do you mean by round? Because I went to the Vulpix last.
I didn't even go to the Vulpix.
Well, so like each progressive battle, like the first battle that I did was I don't remember what order I did them in, but it was like Vulpix, Sizzlipede, and Litwick. And they got progressively different because I was kind of the same way. I was like, oh, I don't really know what's happening. And once I saw it was 2-on-1, I was like, oh, I got to catch it before they do. I get it.
Yeah.
So then they were attacking it and I was like, I'm just going to to like whittle away at it, but I have to throw a ball before they do once it gets to a point where it's catchable.
I don't think I ever had any of the other trainers attack the Pokemon. I think I kept getting
my person attacked the Litwick, which is why it died.
Yeah, no. I kept getting I got attacked once, I believe, and then I just kept getting just status effects or like things that would lower my like speed and stuff.
Mm.
So then I think at one point, because I was fighting the Litwick, and then I was trying to, actually, no, maybe they did attack the Litwick, but I knocked out the Litwick. And I was like, oh, I wanted to catch it because I just want to catch these and be done. So my Litwick was knocked out. I went to the Sizzlipede.
Sizzlipede, yeah, that's a good name.
And I caught that Pokemon. One. I caught that one, and I was going to go back. I was going to go over to the Vulpix, but then I saw the Litwick spawned again, so I just caught the Litwick, and then I was done.
The Litwick spawned again.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I caught all three of them because I was like, I'm not going to give them the opportunity to catch them. I want to catch them.
I like how we all like misunderstood what this is supposed to be.
No, I got it pretty quickly. Yeah, but they're, like, they're after not, the they're first not, battle.
Yeah, after the first one, you get it. But like, you thought they were going to catch it. I thought they were going to knock it out.
I didn't think they were going to catch it. I thought that they were trying to prevent, they were going to kill all of my Pokemon, so I just couldn't catch it. Not that they were going to catch it before me.
Yeah.
Well, I interpreted it as you get 2 points for catching, one for knocking it out. So at some point, they're going to try and catch it, especially the one that started to attack the Pokemon and whittle it down. I was like, oh, they're going to try and catch it. I got to throw a ball before they do.
Yeah, I thought they were just going to knock it out so you couldn't catch it to make it harder. So that's why, like, once I realized they were attacking the Pokemon, I was like, oh, I'm just going to attack every trainer as soon as I get into the battle. And once they're eliminated, I can take my time to catch that Pokemon.
I did that once, so because I didn't want the trainer to like keep attacking me, but I knocked out one of the trainers, and then they let out their Salandit
evolved.
Salazzle.
Yeah. So one of them had a Salazzle after I knocked out their first Pokemon, because I was like, stop.
Salazzle, Sizzlipede. They really like their Z's. These fire Pokemon.
I knocked out one Litwick, caught the other one, caught Sizzlipede.
Yeah.
Whatever, Vulpix.
The Kabu fight was good. They do this weird thing where Kabu walks out the entrance with you.
I wanted this whole montage because I was like, oh my gosh, you're my mentor. Like, I want to learn so many things from you. That was the whole vibe that he gave me too. That was like, this is a learning experience because of how my whole entire Kabu interaction just generally was. I was like, well, I'm definitely learning something here.
Yeah, Kabu is, I think, instantly comes off as the gym leader, at least out of the ones we see, that you could tell that the other gym leaders like respect and that this dude's been doing it. Like Kabu comes off as that teacher in college or that teacher in high school where you want to like stop in their office after class or after the day is over to, you know, ask them a question or pick their mind. And I don't know if that was the intention or I don't know if I'm misreading that, but that's 100% what Kabu comes off as to me.
I totally had that same.
They idolize
impression.
Him. Is that what you're saying?
But again, like going back to, you know, like Sun and Moon or X and Y, I don't think a lot of those gym leaders have that kind of characteristic. And I like, you know, Hala and I like Ace Rola. And I think that there was interesting things about like Kahili and Nanu, but none of how they're doing character development in this game just seems better.
Yeah, it's way more thought out and it feels more cohesive. Like everybody feels like the personality that they're clearly trying to give them.
Yep. I had something written down exactly that's about that. After Kabu, I lost to Kabu three times. No, twice.
Oh no.
No, three times, I think. And then Steve had to come in and was coaching me because I was just like, ah, But earlier you were talking, Micah, you were talking about how you noticed the crowd during your Nessa battle.
Mm-hmm.
There was a surge, definitely, with my crowd when Kabu had a critical hit against one of my Pokemon. And
oh,
I was just like, yeah. And so then I was really paying attention to that for the rest of my battles with him. and then I also observed was when he Dynamaxed, when he threw his Pokeball, like the big one, the flames.
His eyes light up.
Yeah, I didn't know if that happened with the other two leaders.
So Milo kisses his Pokeball before he throws it.
Okay.
And I can't remember what Nessa does, but, or not, Milo doesn't kiss it. He like kind of like pats it like you would pat like the head of your dog. Like good job, boy. Like he kind of gives it like a double pat and then throws it.
Nessa has her like leg extending thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
She puts her leg up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is, that's kind of goes back to that battle with your first battle with Hop, where Leon says you worry too much about things that you don't need to worry about, like how you throw your Pokeball.
Oh, his like arm, like his shoulder flex.
Yeah.
Shrug.
Because all of the like the great gym leaders have a specific way they throw the Pokeball, and Hop clearly was like trying to make his own like way to throw his Pokeball. And Leon saying, like, don't worry about that, because it's not as important as just being a good trainer. He's got a Ninetales, an Arcanine, and a Centiscorch.
Hardcore Gen 1er over here.
I was actually kind of disappointed that there were no Hoenn Pokemon on his team, because they set up that lore that he was from Hoenn. So I was like, oh, maybe he's going to have a Hoenn Pokemon on his team.
But yeah. Nope. well, you know, I guess like Arcanine's technically pretty bulky, and the Ninetales is also pretty bulky.
I really like Centiscorch a lot. It was a cool Pokemon.
Yeah, his Dynamax move where it like does the up and down, I don't know, zigzag thing.
The Flutterby?
Not the Flutterby. It was like Scorchinium Z or whatever. I don't remember what it was called.
Scorchinium Z.
It was a fire move because the Flutterby thing wasn't a fire move. Although he does use that if your Pokemon is mute. If you have, like, he has that move in case you have, like, a water Pokemon, because obviously he's not going to use a fire move against a water Pokemon. I don't know exactly what the Flutterenium, Fluttershy move was.
It's a really good Gigantamax, too. It just gets, like, longer and more scary. Because it's a pretty, like, intimidating-looking Pokemon as far as design goes, and then when it Gigantamaxes, it's maybe even more intimidating.
So if he was a, if they did say from Hoenn, his options for fire Pokemon would be Camerupt.
Torkoal,
Numel, and, welcome to Gen 3.
I mean, Camerupt maybe would make their Torkoal, but, you know, it was just a minor grip. It wasn't anything that I, like, was really upset about. I noted that he was from Hoenn, and then I also noted that he didn't have any Hoenn Pokemon.
Options were pretty limited.
Maybe that's why he moved to Galar, so he'd have more options for fire Pokemon. He's like, I got nothing out here in Hoenn. I got Camerupt. I can't use Torchic because all the other new trainers have them.
Yeah, I mean they could have given him like a Lampet maybe, but Lampet's way easier stat wise to get rid of.
Sure.
It's not as bulky. It's not as I mean, and his strat is bulk like meant around that, right? He needs to survive to burn you, and once you are burned, he can now do more things to you.
Yeah.
So that totally makes sense. The easy Pokemon here to use is Drednaw. You have both rock coverage, water coverage, and then when you get to Centiscorch, you have 4x weakness. So that's obviously the biggest setup. So it's very easy to say this gym. Anyone who's like this gym was easy, totally. Like if you have the one or two Pokemon that you know you go into setting up, that's going to be easy. Just like you know if you went to Nessa with a Boltund. Nessa is going to be extremely, extremely easy for you because it's so much faster than her Pokemon. It has that electric typing.
What I went in with for Nessa too.
And while I do think the pacing in this game is better, I do think, I have no clue if they changed the stats on the back end. It sure feels like it, especially when you're out in the wild area and you're like, why is this level 14 Oddish not taking so many hits?
Why is it not, or why
is
it
taking so many hits? I think I would argue that this game is harder if you refuse to switch out your team, and the game is easier if you do switch out your team, which I think the game encourages, and I think it should encourage, because at this point there's 800 plus Pokemon. It's
sure
kind of weird if you refuse to use 700 plus of them and only take six, but there are totally players who only use their starter and nothing else.
Yep.
Totally viable to do that. There are some people who just pick six Pokemon, refuse to change those six Pokemon. But in this game, I've been having so much fun switching out my team, changing. I still keep my starter. But you know, I dropped Bolthound. I dropped Wooloo. I'm sorry, I can't remember Wooloo's evolution off the top of my head. I dropped Corvisquire.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most I have changed my team ever in a Pokemon playthrough, and I'm only three badges in now. And in retrospect, if I had Drednaw, which I dropped way early, I would have had an easier time with
Kabu.
Sure. I think that there's an aspect to that too, where they tell you in advance, like you kind of knew in advance what the gyms were going to be. Like you knew you were going to have to do the grass gym and then the water gym and then the fire gym before you even set out to tackle the first one. So it gave me the opportunity to, like you said before, like plan, okay, I'm going to be taking on the water gym next, so I'm going to swap in electric Pokemon and train those up, and then the fire gym's next, so I'm going to swap in Aeroscuda and Drednaw, and I have my starter, so, and that's, you know, I have the Sobble starter, so I trained up water Pokemon in preparation for the fire gym. So I also have been a lot more like preparing, because I think I've had the opportunity to know further in advance what's coming up, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's made it more fun, though. I think it's been a lot more fun exploring. Like I said, I'm playing mostly with new Pokemon, and it's made it fun to find new Pokemon that fit whatever type advantage I need for the next gym, and then working on those new Pokemon and seeing, you know, whatever comes with it, and trying to be prepared that way. Because I didn't know that Aerokuda evolved, and I got to experience that on the way to Kabu, and that's like just one instance of Pokemon that I'm discovering just from having to train for what's to come.
Yeah. And then we'll end off the episode where Kabu gives you a farewell, tells you where to go next, and he mentions that a lot of trainers don't actually get to beat him, and they drop out of the challenge, the cup challenge, because they can't defeat him. And again, this is what I said earlier, but you can tell that like Nessa and Milo definitely look up to Kabu as probably some role model, or even I would argue maybe like a father figure, that I would assume there's probably lore that they became gym leaders because of him. It seems like that would be the case.
I'm sure they look up to him because everybody blasts through their gyms and then gets stuck at his.
I liked that Kabu did take a moment to just bid us farewell, and I also liked that Milo and Nessa also joined him for that. Just because it was like, oh, like the three quote unquote traditional types, like it's like, okay, you've defeated these three gym leaders, and they're like, okay, move forward to where you're going to go and defeat all of these other types that you, I mean, obviously you've still seen them.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's like, well, you started out seeing those three types specifically. And I thought that kind of reinforced that teacher vibe that I got right off the bat with Kabu, where it was like, okay, you have achieved the goal that I set for you by defeating me. Go forth. So, yeah. So I thought that was really cute that they were. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I just liked that all three of them just did their farewell. I mean, kind of farewell. I'm sure we'll see them again.
And all came out together. I didn't even realize, really think about it too much until you said it, but like I knew that it was the three original types, but they're set up in a way too that every gym that you fight on that path is in a circular motion, and it's in the like weakness pattern or the strength pattern, so grass strong to water, water strong to fire, fire strong to grass. Lots of little details in this game that I really like finding that I feel like are more little details than in previous Pokemon games.
Well, that is our episode. We will be back tomorrow, which should be the Monday episode. And then we will probably be on our way to the fourth gym. You got time to catch up and or prepare, or maybe you've already beaten the game by this point. There's a lot to do, though, but thank you for listening. Thank you for the kind words you've said, whether that's on the Discord or the Slack or the Twitter or in Twitch or whatnot. We've been having fun doing this series for you guys, so we'll be back tomorrow. Thank you all for listening, and good
night,
Galar.